I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
Yes, indeed. Just about 10 minutes left in today's trading session. So just a few minutes to wrap up that Thursday trade. We are hovering near our best levels of the session. So as Charlie mentioned, really seeing some decent gains, 1.3% higher on the S&P, 1.5% higher on the Dow.
And up, I think that's more than decent. Do you?
It's not decent if you're shorting the market, because you'd be like, I'd love to see a little bit of selling.
Well, you saw some on Monday.
We did. But we've made back that ground in a big way. Doug Cioka is CEO and partner at Kavar Capital Partners, $1 billion in assets under management. Back with us from Leawood, Kansas. Doug, how are you?
I am great. How about you guys?
Doing well. It's been another, I hate to use the word interesting, we overuse it, but you know, there was fear in the markets on Monday. I was reading something about JP Morgan, who was talking about fund flows, ETF flows out on Monday, about $11 billion, which was, I think, the biggest on a down day this year outside of quarterly options and futures expirations. And then here we are, a rally, and we've bounced back significantly. How do you see the internals of the market? Is it fragile? Is it confident? Is it strong? What do you see?
I think it's more confident than it is fragile. It may be a little tired, right? I think it might be calm but not complacent. And to your point, Carol, I mean, you're coming into this week off of a down week and a really bad Friday, which was a quadruple witching Friday.
Right.
And you kind of had this trifecta of fear that was percolating over the weekend. Obviously, the Evergrande news and the prospects of it having the capability to catalyze a global credit event, given kind of its precarious lending position. You had the Fed meeting, right, timing and intensity of whatever tapering or tightening communication they were going to provide. All the nausea, as was just mentioned in that Bloomberg opinion piece preceding our segment, of these political debates domestically, debt ceiling concerns, all the bureaucratic bundling and continuing resolutions, and throwing a fourth deal, right, is seasonality, which seems to be getting a lot of time and attention, and was even typified in some of the fund flows that I read that you'd mentioned about JP Morgan earlier this week. So if you have all of those things, right, you go into a market that becomes incredibly oversold, right, after the Monday down day, and it was down 1,000 points with about 40 minutes to go, and massive futures buying came in, and then everyone hoped for this turnaround Tuesday, and that fell flat. But then ultimately the Fed comes out and I think threads the needle yesterday and injects more optimism back into the market that carried through yesterday afternoon and all of today.
Hey, I just want to go back to Evergrande, because is the market telling us that this is not going to be a global credit event?
I think the market is telling us that, Tim, and I think a few things, right? Why would we fear Evergrande? And I think it's not so much from a Lehman-like credit catastrophe, but more from a consumer demand destruction in the U.S. and Europe, and a business demand destruction prospects in other parts of the world, right? China's financial system is still in many respects closed, but is the impact of the purchasing power of those that are most adversely impacted over in China that could ripple through the global economy. I actually read an awesome article. I think it's going to be the cover story for next week's Bloomberg Business Week edition. It takes a really deep dive on the evolution of Evergrande, its prospects for recovery.
Yeah, it's our international cover, actually, this week.
Okay. So the best line I thought of the whole article was, you know, Chinese leaders speak of the goals of moderate prosperity and common prosperity, and households accumulating more debt to buy multiple or luxurious homes doesn't sync with that vision.
Right.
I thought that was fascinating, right? Ultimately, it's hard to square communism and capitalism, and I think the market created a lot of volatility trying to piece those together.
So dips. When are dips buying opportunities, and when are dips a sign of the beginning of a correction?
Yeah, you know, I think, and I actually keep taped on one of my screens at work, my main man of all time, Peter Lynch, and he had said more people have lost money anticipating corrections than in the actual correction. And I think we need to adhere to that considering time in the market, not timing the market. However.
But you know what however, I mean. Come however, on, we can
hold
be
on, there's
smart.
A however, there's a however here.
Right, exactly.
Right. I mean, right now there's just so much cash. And we've actually done a deeper dive. And what does that mean? Everyone talks about cash on the sidelines. Well, where is this cash? And where are these sidelines? Well, there is a lot of money that is looking to find an entry point. And, you know, this is the first 5% pullback we've had in the year. Maybe that speaks to the seasonality impact. It was not on a closing low, but an intraday low. We saw a 5.2% pullback September 21st. Last one was a 9.5% in September of 2020. So you have low, you have a lot of cash, you have low interest rates, and Jay Powell just said yesterday they're going to stay low for a while. That's heartening for risk assets. And then you have market multiples that are improving, right? So you have an S&P that's up 17-18% for the year, and it's selling at a lower, a cheaper multiple than it did in the first of the year. So for people that are concerned about a dip turning into a correction, you need to typically have earnings rolling over, and a Fed policy mistake. And I don't know how we have a mistake, because we're going to have the most telegraphed and transparent Fed move in history the next time the Fed
agreed.
Actually pulls the trigger.
I mean, they basically are, I keep saying this, but they are spoon feeding us. And yeah. To be fair, Mike McKee said, Jay Powell did a great job yesterday. I mean, the markets kind of got it, understood it, and are off and running.
I agree. I mean, I think they've done a good job for quite a while, Carol, but yet yeah. It seems that, like, ahead of every meeting, there emerges this deep-seated fear that Powell is going to disclose some, like, alternate agenda or suggest that his open market committee has overtaken his influence, and the market's going to left to ascertain what that all means. But he's doing everything he can, in my opinion, to thread that needle between stimulating the economy and not provoking hyperinflation. And it's a real-time experiment or exercise. But again, the transparency is I think, a big asset for him.
All right. Any nervousness out there? Just got about 30
Always.
Seconds left. Always.
Oh, gosh, of course. I mean, and we talked about this a couple months ago. Our challenge right now in sourcing client or investing client capital is in fixed income.
Yeah.
I mean, right. You know that it's impossible to predict the returns in the credit markets over the next 20 years that we saw in the last 20. So
right.
We're spending a lot of time there. And of course, that makes us nervous. Absolutely.
All right. We're going to leave it there. Always good to check in with you. Be well. Doug Scioca, he is CEO and partner at Kavar Capital Partners, $1 billion in assets under management, joining us once again on the phone from Leawood, Kansas.